Morning. There is one case to be heard this morning. It is number 2021-64, Cincinnati Federal Savings and Loan versus McLean, the Tax Commissioner. We will hear argument first this morning from the appellant, Mr. Mann.
Thank you, Master Commissioner, and may please the court. I want to say, and I'm sure Ms. Mesereau shares this thought, we appreciate your flexibility in allowing us to convert from in-person to virtual. We have some health issues within our household, so it's very helpful. So thank you for that. I represent the appellant, Cincinnati Federal Savings and Loan. And I want to first focus on a couple things with respect to the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. The appellant presented four witnesses. Their testimony was about 125, 126 pages of the transcript, which was 135 pages. The tax commissioner presented no witnesses. The opinion, the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals barely acknowledges the testimony of these four witnesses. The opinion dismisses, I think, fairly summarily their testimony with a one or two sentence description. And that's number one. Number two, as I pointed out in our brief, the opinion of the Board of Tax Appeals consists of about 18 paragraphs, and only most of them are repetitive, are quotations, and there are only four paragraphs that actually attempt to analyze the issues at hand. I don't find the paragraphs terribly substantive or terribly helpful in our understanding the reasoning for the of the Board of Tax Appeals or why the Board of Tax Appeals found against the taxpayer. But in any event, I wanted to start out with the statute, of course. And as you know, 5739.01 of the sales and use tax provisions of the state of Ohio is a very lengthy provision. And with respect to the purchase by Cincinnati Federal of financial services from Fiserv, the provider of those services, the relevant provision is 5739.01Y1D, which basically defines automatic data processing, computer services, and electronic information services, and states that those shall not include, and I quote, shall not include personal or professional services. And then the statute goes on to state that personal or professional services shall mean all services other than automatic data processing, computer services, and electronic information services.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Mann.
Yes.
About that. Do you dispute that the definition of automatic data processing and electronic information services would apply to the services that Fiserv is providing? In other words, do the definitions apply at all?
They apply unless the exemption is available. I mean, the issue is whether the exemption is available.
So it's in your view, an exemption case where the personal services listed are exemptions from the general definition.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And of course, the exemptions that we rely on are subparagraph A, accounting and legal services, which as you know, is a lengthy provision, and subparagraph E, custom software. And I wanted to begin and concentrate on accounting issues. And the interesting thing is, if you look at the brief of the tax commissioner, there's a fair amount of agreement of what the nature is of the services that are provided and their significance to the business of the taxpayer. And quoting from page two of the merit brief of the appellee, during the refund period, Fiserv provided the Prolog accounting platform, which processed and tracked all entries made into Cincinnati Federal's general ledger accounts in real time, and which could be accessed by it for current data retrieval. On page three, again, I quote, the general ledger is a central bookkeeping ledger for a business, summarizing all transactions, and enabling the business to create necessary financial statements and account outputs. This includes incoming and outgoing cash deposits for accounts held at the bank. As a ledger, it is a record for a business, a reference point from which a business can understand its current financial position. It accumulates historical financial data for a company and allows for output and summaries regarding the current financial state of an institution. And then on page 16, and again I quote, there is little doubt of the importance of a general ledger to any business, particularly to Cincinnati Federal's bank, not as to whether it provides some business function, but the relative need for a general ledger is not an issue in this case. Rather, the issue is how the general ledger is provided. Here, the ledger is an automated record held on a server in Wisconsin that's repeatedly updated based on the transactions in which Cincinnati Federal's banks engage. Now, those quotations are supported in large part by citations to the testimony of our CPA expert, Scott Dieters, who was accepted as an expert by the tax commissioner. Mr. Dieters is a practitioner of some 27 years, I believe. He's involved with a major Ohio CPA firm, which has over 200 CPAs associated with it. His specialty is serving financial institutions. And he spoke, I think, with a great authority about the significance of a general ledger, which is just what the tax commissioner relied on in his brief. And Mr. Dieters emphasized that, quote, on page 110 of the transcript, the general ledger is the key piece to the accounting service. And then on page 112, he reiterates that the provision of the general ledger by Fiserv is exactly the heart of the accounting service that his CPA firm provides to banks, except it can't be done on a real-time basis without the wondrous capabilities of the financial computer services that are provided by Fiserv. So
let me ask you a question about that too. Does the record show, now the record shows, does it not, that the computer on which this ledger is maintained is owned by Fiserv, right?
Correct. And under the contract, the records are owned, the financial records are also owned by Fiserv, with the Cincinnati Federals having obviously the right to access them.
Does the record show that Cincinnati Federal has like an in-house accounting group that works on accounting issues, or is that an external firm?
I think it's both. I mean, Mr. Dieters and his firm provide accounting services to Cincinnati Federal. Cincinnati Federal obviously has many employees, and some of them deal with supporting financial issues.
Does the record show whether Fiserv itself hires accountants in relation to selling services to Cincinnati Federal?
No, it does not. It does not speak to that. But just to emphasize, I don't think the issue is what's provided or even whether it's accounting services, except the tax commissioner maintains, well, if it's provided just by computer, it can't be professional services. And obviously, we disagree with that. The statute doesn't require personal. It says personal or professional services. The cases, it's interesting to me that the cases relied upon by the parties, Genuine Parts, CCH, Computex, and MIB, are all cases from the early 90s. In fact, if you track the dates of the Board of Tax Appeals decisions, the cases were in the late 80s. And just think, if you will, how the world of technology and computer capabilities has evolved so dramatically since that time. And so we're trying to apply cases from the late 80s and early 90s to a world that did not exist and probably couldn't be contemplated. And I'm frequently reminded that the definition of accounting data processing has as its first example in the statute, key punching. Now, I don't know where the key punching is still done. I don't think it's done. That's not the way data is entered these days. So the world has changed. And the question is whether the interpretation of the statute, the taxability of services is going to evolve or not. We think genuine parts is significant because genuine parts does clearly say that if it doesn't matter that a computer is used, if the services are accounting or financial services, the exemption is available. And that's why we cited, why we relied on it. Page 18 of our merit brief has a table comparing what's done by FISER for Cincinnati Federal on the one hand and what genuine parts did for its jobbers on the other hand. And there was some question about, well, what kind of exchange was there between individuals with the taxpayer and FISER? And we went into a lot of detail in another table on page 4 of our reply brief. And it's clear that there are a lot of interactions between human beings employed by FISER and human beings employed by Cincinnati Federal. I mentioned the fundamental fact that the statute doesn't say personal and professional. It says personal or professional, and a human being need not be involved, although there is one involved, or there are many involved. But I think what we're, and I alluded to this earlier, we're going to have to all deal with the evolution of artificial intelligence. And just this week, there have been stories about autopilots and Tesla automobiles, and maybe they're not quite as safe as expected. A few years ago, I represented a franchisee of a legal forms franchisor who the Bar Association questioned on the basis that the provision of those legal forms was the provision of legal services and licensing as a lawyer was required. And as you know, and as lawyers,
attaches significance to the language of the part of the statute that talks about accounting services. And the statute says where the service provider receives data or information and studies, alters, analyzes, interprets, or adjusts the material. And I'm wondering what in the record shows that FISER adjusts the material from an accounting standpoint. Is that something that FISER actually does?
Essentially, and this goes back to the testimony of Mr. Dieters, the provision of a general ledger on a real-time basis requires continuing computer-based analysis of data that's inputted, and that impacts the products that can be produced from the general ledger, whether it's this morning's financial statement, this morning's summary of deposits, this morning's summary of withdrawals, and so forth. And our position is, and this is supported by Mr. Dieter's testimony, but to your specific question, is there any testimony about any other testimony about analysis? No.
Provided by accounting analysis provided by human beings who are employed by FISER.
No. We basically, our position is this very sophisticated system, which does what a human being can do, was programmed. Obviously, presumably it was programmed with the assistance of professionals. That's not in the record. I don't know how else it could do what it does, but that's where we end up, absolutely. I was mentioning—
Doesn't that relate to your other claim under that Division E about customizing the software?
Sure, and I think our we rely principally on the accounting provision, but yes, the record clearly shows that we didn't just plug in what was provided by FISER. It included months of work to adapt, modify, implement as the contract, the contractual language states, implement the system for Cincinnati Federal. And once it was adapted, customized, it could not be used by any other institution. And that customization was not simply adding Cincinnati Federal names. It was making sure that the products that came out matched the needs of Cincinnati Federal. And in the record, there's testimony about from Ms. Ventry about the fact that there was a need for a new product, that is a new capability, and that was developed in collaboration, a process of collaboration between Cincinnati Federal and Pfizer. And if that's not customization, I'm not sure what it is. I mean, the Board of Tax Appeals says it was customization of data. And of course, I don't know how you customize data without providing customized software.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Your time has expired for now.
Thank you so much.
We will hear from Ms. Mesereau. I think you're muted.
My apologies, forgot to unmute. your question, may it please the court, your questioning of my learned opponent has focused in on the crux of the issues before the board. The services provided by Pfizer, the board found in affirming the commissioner, are not personal and professional accounting services, because there is no studying, analysis, review of the data that is performed by Pfizer. And the testimony was clear that this was the system. The system does everything. Mr. Dieters testified to that. And so everything was built into the software system, and that runs on a logic, you know, if this, then this. There's mapping so that inputs that are put in by the bank or its customers are mapped to go into certain accounts. But again, that is not, that doesn't utilize the, you know, it doesn't involve studying or anything by a person.
Let me ask you a question. Do you view the list, the non-exhaustive list of personal or professional services as exemptions from the general definition of ADP?
Well, you know, you can look, originally, as the statute has evolved, it was an exception, an exclusion. You can make the argument that perhaps it shouldn't be treated as an exclusion, and yet the rule is you fit the definition of automatic data processing and electronic information service, but the reason it isn't taxable is if it is one of those listed services.
Although the statute says this is not an exhaustive list,
right.
So it could just be saying any or professional service.
And in this particular case, I don't think it matters, because appellants, we don't need the strict construction that comes along with claiming an exemption in order to prevail. There's just been an utter lack of proof by appellants that the claims for refund, the transactions at issue, were accounting professional services. A lot of the testimony by the witness.
Excuse me, can I direct your attention to the portion of the claim about customization of software?
Yes.
And ask you, do you agree with the BTA's finding that the services Pfizer provides are in the middle of a spectrum, with pre-written software at one end and software created from scratch at the other. Do you agree with that finding?
Based on what we have in the record, I think it's a reasonable finding. I think it's pretty clear from the record that Fiserv has the software product, that it wasn't developed solely for one customer, but that in selling it to various banks, they do offer all kinds of modifications that they can do. And if those modifications are making modifications to application software such as this, and they're separately stated and billed, then those would not be taxable. But all these modifications in the implementation of the software, that all took place prior to the refund period. And the testimony of the hearing examiner asked this during the hearing of Mr. Cunningham and I was looking for the site, but the testimony was that all took place prior to the period covered by the refund claim. Now, they may be doing this, as Ms. Ventry testified, they may do other modifications during the refund period, but these were not quantified or identified. She made a passing reference to one, such she said that one item on the invoice would be a charge for making modifications, but there really was very little support for any of that.
But if there is some kind of ongoing process of adapting the software to Cincinnati Federal, doesn't that come under that statutory provision, which includes not only just creating software from scratch, but designing procedures for collecting business information, how it should be summarized, sequenced, formatted, processed, etc.?
I'm not sure that is the provision, but that doesn't convert the entire package into that. It would be whatever specific items that the bank says we need the software to do X, Y, and Z. Can you write code for that?
Well, that brings me to my next question. Doesn't the statute talk about if there's like a mixed or bundled transaction?
Yes.
Doesn't it talk about determining the true object of
exactly.
the transaction, which would occur with respect to each of the charges at issue in the case?
So there's nothing in the record to show the extent of the customization as compared with the total package that they reserve. There's no evidence as to the kinds of customizations. You know, the significance of them. There's just no evidence. So to look at it as a bundled transaction, if the personal or professional services are not separately stated and billed, then the entire transaction is taxable.
So your view is that the true object test would not be applied in a way that could exempt some of these charges. The charges always have to be broken out?
Yes. Yes, I don't believe, the true object test could be applied, but based on the record in this case, there simply is insufficient evidence to lead to the conclusion that the true object was the modifications and the personal development as opposed to the 180 some different processing functions that they contracted.
But the BTA did not actually do a true object analysis.
No, well, they didn't, and again, when we're looking, this is the argument they were making on the software. I think that the BTA decision, I think it can fairly be read to say, there's nothing here to show that there's not nothing here in the record. You haven't presented sufficient evidence to show that this was truly a customized product designed exclusively for Cincinnati Federal.
Well, assuming that the statute covers only that, as we talked about before, it might be broader. It might cover adapting, the kind of adapting that FISERV does do.
But as I said, those charges, that service is already treated as non-taxable if it is separately billed. So you know, you don't even have to go.
Weren't there some charges that the tax commissioner did allow a tax refund on? Or am I?
I believe there were some, I think in the presentation of their appeal, there was almost like a conflation of the concept of this is all custom, this is custom software, and then when you tried to pin them down on what do you mean by custom, there was very little substance there other than, well, they do these modifications on occasion, but no quantification of the amount of them or the cost of them. So, but whether the software itself was custom or not, the refund is for the process. It's primarily for the processing of the data that in the EIS that is provided. So, in a sense, it doesn't matter if the software was or wasn't custom when it was installed, because those are not the charges for which they seek the refund. I think it's important when you look at these, you got to go back to the contract. You know, yes, they presented testimony of witnesses who have an interest. You know, of course, it's the taxpayer and their consultants. They didn't present any testimony from FISERV. So you have to look at I think it's really key that you look at the contract, you look at the invoices, because this is what documents what is being provided. And if you look at the contract in the appendix, you will see like on pages, I think it's 15 through 18 in there, there's a whole listing of more than 180 processing services that FISERV is providing. And this shows you that this is more in the nature of a data processing, updating of the data as it's fed in, as opposed to a study and an analysis of data. Even the few times their witness, Mr. Dieters, talked about they analyze data, it became clear in his testimony what he's talking about is analyzed in a data processing sense. It's did this data come from an employee? Did this data, you know, verification of the data? It wasn't that a FISERV person was looking at this data and saying, oh, what does this mean? This was all something done in the system. So whether it's done by a human or by the system, the fact is they don't meet the there is no professional study analysis, whatever, performed by FISERV employees for which these charges are made. They might have been able to document some of the modifications, but the claim doesn't do that. And therefore, since they weren't documented and broken out, they're subject to tax.
Do you have any other argument to
present? I don't believe so, unless you have any other questions.
All right, thank you, Ms. Mesereau. Mr. Mann, you've used your time, but let's give you a minute of rebuttal.
Thank you, sir. I just want to quote from page 13 of the merit brief of the appellee. It is Cincinnati Federal's position, she says, that because the data processing electronic information services provided by Fiserv replaced services that might have been provided to the bank by professional accountants. Prior to the widespread use of computers, Fiserv services are transformed into personal or professional service. And it goes on to say, if the service provided does not involve a person rendering professional analysis, review, judgment, or advice, but only the processing of data provided electronically, that is not a professional service, regardless of how that service may have been provided prior to the use of computer technology. That cannot be a sensible conclusion for taxing the provision of computer software that does accounting in the state of Ohio. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mann. This case will be submitted to the court and the court will advise the parties of its decision. Would the marshal please adjourn the court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.